From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Tuesday, August 10th.
There's sort of an assumption that if you don't know what the woman is doing, she's probably not accomplishing much.
That was Jennifer Palmieri, former White House Communications Director and fellow host at The Recount, talking about the media's treatment of Vice President Kamala Harris. We'll dig into that a little bit later on, but first, your morning headlines. We begin with COVID, which continues to spread uncontrollably across most of the U.S. Cases on Sunday hit over 110,000, a 112% increase from 2 weeks earlier. Hospitalizations reached over 60,000, with Louisiana and Florida both reporting all-time highs. While some governors have issued executive orders against mask mandates and vaccine requirements, some local leaders and businesses are bucking those orders. Dallas school officials announced on Monday that students and staff are required to wear masks while inside, defying an executive order from the state's governor barring mask mandates. Over in Florida, a federal judge gave Norwegian Cruise Line a green light to mandate that crew members and passengers be vaccinated. It's in direct conflict with a recent Florida law banning businesses from requiring proof of vaccination. Meanwhile, the Pentagon announced that it will require all active duty service members to be vaccinated by mid-September, or possibly even sooner, if the Food and Drug Administration gives its full approval of the vaccine. President Joe Biden, who must approve the mandate, was quick to praise the Pentagon's decision. A code red for humanity. That's what the United Nations chief called the newly released review on climate science issued by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The report, 8 years in the making, said that there is now zero doubt that humans are fueling climate change, laying out catastrophic impacts and a grim future if we don't change course immediately. The report served up an urgent warning to governments around the world that changes in the Earth's climate were happening at a much faster pace than previously thought, bringing widespread devastation and extreme weather with it. The report encouraged world leaders to urgently craft new policy measures that would shift the global economy to a new low-carbon footing. Leaders from 197 countries will meet in Glasgow this November for critical climate talks. Calling all space cadets, NASA is now taking applications for four individuals to live in conditions similar to life on Mars, but in Texas. Volunteers will live for 1 year in a 1,700-square-foot module called the Dune Alpha. It'll simulate living on another planet. The habitat will simulate challenges that might be experienced in a place like Mars. That includes resource limitations, equipment failure, communications delays, and other environmental stressors. Well, the experiment will help NASA plan for future space missions. The experiment will start in the fall of 2022, and all volunteers will be paid. The application is now open to U.S. citizens ages 30 to 55 in good health with either a STEM master's degree or experience flying an aircraft. And now to our daily deep dive. Vice President Kamala Harris has blazed an unconventional and remarkable path in politics. First woman vice president, first Black vice president, first South Asian vice president. Will the media ever forgive her? Here to help me dig into this is former White House Communications Director and fellow host at The Recount, Jennifer Palmieri. Hey, Jen, welcome.
Thank you, Rena. Good to be with you.
Great to have you on. So I want to ask you, I mean, you have been in politics for quite some time, dealing with female candidates, right? Was Hillary Clinton the first female candidate you worked with?
She was. And it was quite an eye-opener because I thought I'd worked for President Clinton. I worked for President Obama. I had been part of four or five presidential campaigns. So I thought I'm a great person to work on this campaign for her because I had been through so much. And it was a very different experience.
So explain that to me. So how is it different?
We have different expectations and different questions about women candidates than we do of men. And it took me a while to sort of wrap my head around this notion that as far as we have come, it's still pretty radical to see a woman in the ultimate leadership position, right?
I mean, India had Indira Gandhi, Israel, you know, had Golda Meir, you know, decades ago. Why is this so hard for Americans to conceive?
Because you're pushing against all of human history. And whenever Americans have heard the voice of our president, it has been a man. 97-something% of the Fortune 500 CEOs are men. Women in these positions is definitely the exception as opposed to the rule. And so there's just different kinds of questions that we have about women candidates. And I think part of the reason why it's hard to make progress getting over the double standards is I think we're all so certain that we're not sexist. We're all so certain that we're not racist that we become blind to unconscious bias that all of us have in our heads. Some of the coverage of the vice president a few weeks ago, there were stories about her staff and her staff being unhappy. And that is like a trope against women bosses, right? I've worked for a lot of men, but it doesn't define them the way a woman is defined if she is seen as to be a difficult or demanding boss. That is perceived to be a character flaw, and it defines her in a way that it does not define a male president, a male candidate.
You know, I'm South Asian, and I tell you, the Indian community just really embraced her. The South Asian community just thought this is great, because when folks back in India, journalists started digging into it, they found that she's got real roots, and she did go back, and she did visit, and she's got that connection. But the other side of it is why are they just focusing only on her background and not her career achievements?
You know, she's the first in so many ways, the first woman, the first Black woman, the first South Asian woman, the first woman of color. I think that it is to be celebrated and natural that we will want some part of her coverage to be going down into those roots and looking at the history and looking at her own background. I feel like that is to be expected and even celebrated. So what I think would help get over the double standards is if the press educated themselves about how gender bias is often revealed. For example, I have reviewed a lot of research about women in politics, women in leadership, and how the kind of questions people have for them. We know that women are judged on their record, men are judged on their potential, right? Mm-hmm. So when a woman is running for office, she has to constantly reinforce her credentials for the office in a way that a man does not. I'll use as an example, Secretary Pete Buttigieg, young guy, ran for president as a mayor of a, you know, relatively small city. We sort of recognized him as a smart, promising young leader. That, for women, that is still a stretch for us. For women, we need them to prove to us that they have a record of accomplishment. That's true for women who are running for office. There's this group called the Barbara Lee Family Foundation that does a lot of research on women in politics, and they just did a really interesting report about incumbents, right? Because so many women were elected to office in 2018 who are now up for re-election in 2022, women governors like Gretchen Whitmer, for example. And what they found was women have to explain their accomplishments to people. They have to be very clear and report on what they're working on, how they're making progress, and what they've accomplished, because there's sort of an assumption that if you don't know what the woman is doing, she's probably not accomplishing much. That's a different set of problems than the male candidate may have. It's not that voters don't have questions of men. The questions that they have about women are different. So for the vice president's team, if they're explaining what she's working on, what you really want to do to break through is also remind people of the history that she has on these issues. So for example, one of the storylines about her right now is that she's like overwhelmed, that she has too many things on her plate, and that there's a sense, oh, the president saddled her up with all the bad issues. Vice presidents get tough issues because that's what you're there to do. But what I think what would help people to see is like, she's not out there on her own, right? She's the vice president of the United States. She's got a whole team of people behind her. So talking about voting rights, you could say, you know, the vice president asked to work on this because for her whole career, from when she was district attorney to when she was the attorney general of California to when she was United States senator in California, protecting this fundamental right in our democracy has been what has motivated her. And so that's why she is leading this team along with the attorney general, along with everyone else, to bring a whole of government approach, because only the vice president is in a position to do that. And in doing that, you have reminded everyone of all of her experience, that she's leading a team, why she is motivated to work on this, why it makes sense for her to do this as the vice president, and work in how she's making progress. You know, 2 weeks ago, she went to Michigan to meet with voters about this. She led a group of Black women leaders in a meeting at the White House to strategize about how they may educate voters more about the importance of these issues. So had I not worked for Hillary or done all this research, I would not have understood all the things that we need to weave together in a story that the vice president's team will tell about her in order for it to break through and for voters to hear what they need to hear. There's a reason for why she's doing this. There's a team of people behind her. There's a plan for what she's working on and how she's going to accomplish it. And it's just different than the questions we have for men.
Well, we've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Jennifer Palmieri on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio.
I'm here with Jen Palmieri, former White House Communications Director and fellow host at The Recount.
I want to ask you also about another headline that's popping up. And the headline we're seeing recently in the past few days is that Kamala Harris's approval ratings are tanking. Politico Morning Consult had a poll last week that showed 45% of people have a favorable view, while 47% unfavorable. You know, it's interesting. If you looked at Vice President Mike Pence, he had very similar approval ratings at the exact same time during Donald Trump's administration. But you look at the headlines. When I started reading this, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to ask Jen about this.
You know, this is the exact phenomenon we're talking about, where that because she is first, there's a ton of interest in her. She has a press corps assigned to her. I worked for Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Joe Biden, Al Gore did not have press corps assigned to them. There is a ton of scrutiny of her. There's a ton of interest of her. Her staff is relatively small. It's a fraction of the president's communications team. And then she has, on top of all of that, an expectation that she will also run for president.
Of course. I mean, people are already polling her up against DeSantis, governor of Florida. Is this problematic for her, though? You know, narratives take off and they stick. Could this be a problem for her if she chooses to run?
There was an assumption that for a lot of people that she, as the vice president, is the heir apparent, that she's the most likely person to be the Democratic nominee if Joe Biden chooses not to run. And I think that has always been folly to assume that the vice president is in the best position to become the Democratic nominee, no matter who that person is. But, you know, Kamala Harris has been in politics for a long time. She's been discounted her entire lives, and every job she's had, she's almost always been the first. So it's not anything new to her. And I think that she went into this job understanding, rather than being a layup to become the Democratic nominee, what being the first woman in this job was going to mean was a lot more scrutiny and a focus on her ambition in a way that would not happen to a man. You know, when last summer, when there was like some folks in Biden's camp that was suggesting that Biden should not pick her because she had run against him and she had ambition to be president, you know, Joe Biden also ran against Barack Obama.
Such a good point. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So, and somehow Joe Biden managed to do a great job, put aside all of his frightful ambition. And it was great, despite some people in the camp that thought President Biden shouldn't pick her for that reason. You know, he did. So, like, these are things I see as a little bit of progress. But for sure, like, she is under way more scrutiny. She's held to a double standard. If she runs, the position that she's in is a great platform. And at the same time, it holds her up to scrutiny that no other Democrat candidate will be held to.
You know, I covered the George Bush administration from Israel. And at the time, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was coming in to meet with Ehud Olmert, the prime minister. And it was remarkable to me how dismissive they were of her. And this is a Republican. This is not a Democratic issue, by the way.
No. These are not partisan. These things are not partisan. These things are deep.
And it didn't matter that George Bush and her were practically attached at the hip and he was very close to her. And that was his envoy. It didn't matter to the Israelis. They did not take her seriously, was the sense that I got as a correspondent on the ground. And these were his final months where he wanted to push something, as most presidents tried to do, Middle East policy, right? 11th hour. She was working really hard. And I asked Ehud Olmert about that. But it's almost like it's generational. How do you change a whole generation's thinking?
Yeah, But it is. I do feel like I see improvement, right? I see, for example, when I worked for Hillary Clinton, we would try to show authenticity, the big hit on her that she wasn't authentic. And then you try to show true sides of her, other sides of her that the public doesn't see. And it was really rejected as being fake. You just could not win for losing. Vice President Harris is able to do that. She is what people refer to sort of in the gender politics game as a 360-degree leader, meaning she shows us all sides of herself. You know, we see her laughing. We see her with her husband. We see her in her chucks on the weekends. We see different sides of her. There are those who will attack that. You know, like there was a story a couple weeks ago about her laugh and Republicans like criticizing her for
the laugh. A big thing. What is up with this laugh?
There's a history behind this, right? You know, and I talked to the reporter who did that story. He did a very fair job of representing who was attacking her laugh and why. He brought up to me, he said, you know, George Bush was criticized for his smirk at times. He was. It's true. Men get criticized, too. It's not just women. And that was true. You know, he said, so, you know, are you so sure that criticizing Kamala Harris's laugh is rooted in sexism? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I am, because there is not history going back hundreds and hundreds of years of men's facial expressions being criticized and having that being rooted in their gender. But I do see, even though those questions are being raised, they're being raised by Republicans who are trying to undermine her. And like, why are they trying to do that? Because they understand that they don't have a good argument against the president. They can't find a criticism that sticks to him. As of yet, it's early. And they know she is a threat, right? There's a reason she was appointed vice president. She has the fullness that she brings the administration to the ticket that the Republicans see as a problem. They are going after her in ways that they're not with the president. They tried that in 20, you know? They tried it in 20, didn't work.
They also tried it with Michelle Obama, angry Black woman. And, you know, I think her approval ratings were way better than President Obama's by the time the two left office.
Oh my God, right? She was the most popular figure in all of America. So you can, you know, and she had, Mrs. Obama had that problem during the 2008 campaign. She rebounded from that, but her team was also very deliberate in how they communicated around her.
What did they do?
I think that they pulled back. They zeroed in on a few things that she was going to work on. I mean, it's a little different for a first lady than it is for the vice president. This is, talk about a complicated golf swing. That's what it's like to be a woman politician. You have to be likable and you have to be tough enough to be commander in chief. Those two things are non-negotiable. You have to constantly remind people of the experience that you have, and you have to constantly remind people of the work you are doing on their behalf. You have to do all four of those things. That's not easy, but you have to find the behind-the-scenes photos that show her working hard on behalf of the American people. You have to go to the soft interviews where people can see a likable side to her. And whenever you're talking about the work she does, remind people of how much experience that she has and why she's the right person for that job, and give people progress reports. Even if problems aren't going away, first of all, I think that progress is being made almost every day for women, and that there is a way to communicate that, to show that those sides of her. We found one of the best photos of Hillary Clinton that ever like reinforced what people liked about her and what a hard worker she was on behalf of the country was the photo of her on this like airport transport plane with her BlackBerry and her sunglasses on. Do you remember that?
I think that was her Instagram profile for some time.
That one photo went to the crux of what people respected about Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, that she like worked her butt off. She was constantly traveling all over the country on behalf of America. And even when she was on the plane, it wasn't a very nice plane. She was still at work. There are good things we assume about women. We assume that women leaders are good listeners. We assume that women leaders are good team captains. We assume that women leaders are going to work in a cooperative way. Not that men don't, not to be unfair to them, because they can do all of those things as well. But these are things that we're likely to believe about women leaders. So there are positive things that she can lean into as well. It's not all bad.
You know, Jen, you've got a podcast here on The Recount called There's Just Something About Her. And the title came from polling. I love this. The backstory of this. The title came from polling that you guys had done in your previous career with Hillary Clinton. And folks were just saying, there's just something about her that
there's
I don't like.
Something right? about her I don't like. There's just something about her I don't trust. And we turned it into an acronym even because like you just got tired of saying there's just something about her I don't like. And when you try to get at the root of it, people really can't explain it. And even some of the press I would work with, they'd be suspicious of her. And I would be like, well, why? They're like, well, she's always so sketchy. Well, like, why? Well, she's always hiding something. Well, like, what? They'll like hold up Whitewater as an example. And I'm like, well, what was at the root of Whitewater? Well,
but
nothing.
How do you counter that, right?
You know, we obviously did not do it effectively. And that is why I do think like sunshine is the best disinfectant here for people to see, just to start. And, you know, that's why I've written two books about it, to use the Hillary experience, people to learn from, like really consider what is it.
So, Jen, before you go, what would your advice be to Kamala Harris and her team as she's sort of countering all of this? And as I said, sometimes these narratives just...
I mean, it's super early. It's only August of the first year. And so I think that they have a very long way to go. And I think that you have to be very deliberate in how you're communicating and build a program that understands that the questions people have are different for her. She was great, like in the hearing settings, like on the dais, right? When she was maybe interrogating someone of the Senate Intel Committee, she was really good at that. Put her in a setting where she's fighting for people standing behind her that are the victims of injustice, some kind of injustice. Remind us of the different kinds of work that she's doing, reports on it, lots of photos, lots of behind the scene photos of her working hard, things that show her human sides of her too, of her with her family. What those images are, they have the power to give us the best content, right, of what she's actually doing. And just to be very deliberate about how you're presenting her, understanding the four things you got to be: likable, tough, experienced, and making progress.
Jen Palmieri, former White House communications director and fellow host at The Recount.
Jen, so grateful you could
hop on with
me
today.
And now to our look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today. After record-breaking temperatures earlier this summer, yet another heat wave is expected to descend on the Northwest starting today. While temperatures won't likely be as extreme as those in June, triple digits are anticipated for the region. The biggest worry for California is the spread of wildfires. Firefighters there are still battling the second biggest wildfire, the Dixie Fire. And the increase in temperatures and dry air only heightens the risk for even more wildfires. There's also the potential for dry lightning. While early indications from the National Weather Service are that the heat will abate next weekend, the cooler air brings with it gusty and changeable winds, which could make the wildfires even worse. A little before 6 p.m. today, the Cygnus spacecraft will launch from NASA's flight facility in Wallops Island, Virginia. The Cygnus spacecraft is dubbed the SS Ellison Onizuka, in honor of the first Asian-American astronaut. The spacecraft will be loaded with more than 8,200 pounds of research, crew supplies, and hardware, including experiments to study slime mold, human muscle cells, plus 3D printer parts from simulated moon rocks. Today marks the 33rd anniversary of the signing of the Civil Liberties Act. Signed into law in 1988 by President Reagan, the act gave $20,000 in reparations to Japanese Americans who were sent to internment camps by President Franklin Roosevelt during World War II.
My fellow Americans, we gather here today to right a grave wrong. We must recognize that the internment of Japanese Americans was just that, a mistake.
That'll do it for us today. Have a great day, everyone. See you back tomorrow. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Jennifer Palmieri for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.